We're doing Megillah. We're up to the bottom of Tes Amud Beis, and we've been spending the last few weeks reading the Mishnayot that describe Ein Bein. There's no difference between this and that, and it all began with the Ein Bein Adar Rishon LaAdar Sheni, that the Mishnayot describe. There's no difference between this and that, other than, and we said we always have to understand these Mishnayot within a context. It doesn't literally mean there's no difference other than. It means, with regard to a certain aspect, there is no difference other than. And that's why the first thing the Talmud says is always, okay, but with regard to what are they equal? The Talmud does not assume they're equal with regard to everything else. The Talmud understood when it says there's no difference, it means they're equal on a specific set of points, but not on everything. So, we're up to the next Mishnah. Ein ben bama gdola lebama ktana ela psachim. So now we have to introduce, what's a bama? So, technically, when the Jews entered the land of Israel, so they had central altars, which were on an elevated platform, and those were called a bama. Technically, if a person wanted to make his own altar in his backyard, there were periods in Jewish history when that was permitted. And the Gemara will discuss how do we know that it's not permitted anymore. So that's called a bama gedola, a public altar. And a bama ktana is a private altar. So a public altar, you can't bring on a public mizbeach, a bama gedola, you can't bring anything you want on it. We're going to see that certain things cannot be brought on a bama gedola. And you definitely cannot bring whatever you want on a bama ktana. In your own private mizbeach, in your backyard, you can't bring the tamid sacrifice, for example. There's a tamid sacrifice that must be brought on behalf of the Jewish people every morning and every night. So obviously, if that's going to represent all of the Jewish people, that has to be done at a central public bama. So the Mishnah says, the only difference between a bama gedola, a large bama, a public bama, lebama ktana, to a small personal private bama, ela psachim. The only difference, the Mishnah says, is the paschal offering, which is obviously not an exact description, as we just explained. Zeaklal. The Mishnah gives us a rule, and we know that whenever the Mishnah says zeaklal, we have a rule, ein lemeidin mina klalos. You can't learn from a rule. All the rules that the Mishnahs tell us are with exceptions. So the rules are coming to teach me something, but not what they literally say. Again, you have to know the code of Mishnah. In modern day language, if I say the rule is, anyone that walks into this room after 8:30 will get a cupcake, so you assume everyone that walks in is going to get that cupcake. And the Mishnah doesn't work that way. It means not only you and you, but also so and so and so and so. It doesn't mean anyone that will walk in. When I say a rule, the rule is coming to encompass something beyond what I would have said otherwise. Zaklal is coming liribuye, to include something I would have thought is left out, but it's not coming to be as all-inclusive as we would think. So zaklal, this is the rule. Kol is a riboy. Kol shehu nidal venidav. Any sacrifice that can be donated or through a vow of a neder or a nedava, eino karev babama, may be brought on a bama. V'chol she'eino lo nidav v'lo nidav, eino karev babama. And whatever cannot be brought through a vow cannot be brought on a bama. So now let's go back to our discussion of what is a neder and a nedava. The Torah tells us that we have a concept of sacrifices. We have an animal. We'll call her Mary's little lamb. We'll call her Mary. So we have a little lamb named Mary. Okay? This little lamb, we could drink its milk. We could shear its wool. We could give our kids piggyback rides on it. No problem. Mary's our little lamb. But then, one day I decide I have to bring an offering. So certain offerings have the following rule, that when you bring them, you must designate them as offerings. Private offerings must be designated. If I want to bring a chatas, at some point I have to designate this animal that this is a chatas. Now, theoretically, I could sit at home and say, Harei alai chatas. Well, I can't volunteer chatas, but I could volunteer a shlomim. So I say, I take a vow, I will bring a shlomim. Now it's my responsibility. I could take this Mary and bring her up to the temple. When it comes time to sacrifice, I will say, this is the animal I meant. Now I may no longer give my kids piggyback rides on Mary. Mary is now a holy animal. I can also say, I want to bring a sacrifice before God. I take a vow that Mary is now our shlomim. Kids, no more riding on Mary's back. Now Mary has holiness. So far, so good? Okay. Now this concept that we could give holiness to an animal, that concept is called a neder or a nedava. Neder is I'm taking responsibility to give a donation. Nedava is I'm making this animal the donation. The Torah teaches us that we can take this concept of neder and apply it also to mundane things. I could say, I don't like that store. I always buy burgers there and get fat. I say every burger in that store should be prohibited to me, like a shlomim sacrifice. Now, I've taken the holiness of a shlomim sacrifice, and I have not applied it to the burgers of the store. They are not holy, but they are prohibited upon me, just like Mary would be prohibited. The Torah tells us we can make a neder. A neder, by definition, means I take the same concept that I could take on a sacrifice, and I apply it to something mundane, and I make it prohibited upon me. That's a neder.
The neder transfers the prohibition aspect, but doesn't make it...
Excellent, right. Now you guys have an introduction to nedarim. Our Mishnah isn't talking about that type of nedarim. Our Mishnah is talking about a neder, a nedava animal. So the Mishnah says, when it comes to sacrifices that you would designate by making a neder and a nedava, those sacrifices may be brought on a baba. When it comes to sacrifices that you do not designate, what would be an example of that? A public sacrifice like the morning sacrifice. I don't designate the morning sacrifice. It's on behalf of all of the Jewish people. That is not brought on a bama. Now let's see, the Gemara will explain. We said in the beginning of the Mishnah that... Now again, when we say that's not brought on a bama, we mean that's not brought on a private bama. Meaning things that I can't designate, I can't bring in the bama in my backyard. Which is another way of saying public sacrifices cannot be brought in the bama in my backyard.
Doesn't that tell us that everything else is allowed on the...
It says whatever you could designate, meaning whatever are your personal korbanos could be brought during the period when it was permissible to have bamos could be brought on your personal private bama.
Does that mean you can put anything on a public bama?
Like that's how it would seem, right.
And then the bama gadolah, is that only in Shiloh or is that in different places?
Also in Nov and Givon. We'll see. Wait, the Gemara is going to get to Shiloh. Shiloh has greater status than just the regular Bama Gdola. That's the next Mishnah. Yes.
I thought that private altars were not allowed in Shiloh.
That's what we're going to read in a minute. Guys, you're all jumping ahead of me. I got to make believe slowly. I know it too. Really. Let's see. We said in the Mishnah that there's no difference between a big Bama and a small Bama other than Psachin. And then we went on to give a rule which seems to encompass much more than Psachim. So the Gemara asks, Psachim mitulo? Does the Mishnah really mean that the only difference is that you can't bring a Psachim and not nothing else? So the Gemara says, Ema, I'll tell you, Ke'ein Psachim. Psachim is a prototype. Anything like Psachim. Mani, what does Mani mean?
Who is
the author of the Mishnah? Right? Okay, you guys got that? What does Mani mean? Who is the author of the Mishnah? Now, Mani does not mean who is the author of the Mishnah. Now that you got it, let's rectify. Rebbe compiled the Mishnah. Rebbe compiled the Mishnah together with his courts. He gave Mishnayot. He set them up in accordance with certain opinions. He and his courts ruled in accordance with those opinions. Rebbe looked around to see which Mishnayot had the most concise and accurate language. He found that there was one Tana who had beautiful, concise, and accurate language, Rebbe Meir. So he took Rebbe Meir's version of Mishnah, which obviously is aligned with Rebbe Meir's opinion, and that was the basis they worked off of. Then they said, gee, we don't agree with this. Okay, so we'll change that. Here we'll do this way. We don't agree with that. We'll change that. Here, we got to give strength to the other opinion, so we'll mention a dissenting opinion. Here we'll say Rebbe Akiva says this, Rebbe Shimon says that, Rebbe Meir says... Sometimes Rebbe Meir is quoted with his own name. That means it's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Sometimes the Mishnah is Stam. When the Mishnah is Stam, it means we assume it's Rabbi Meir's opinion when the Mishnah is stated plainly. And it means that Rabbi gave that Mishnah the status of Rabbim plus the status of Stam. A Stam Mishnah is stronger than an opinion quoted in another Mishnah as Chachamim Omrim. When it says in the Mishnah Chachamim Omrim, the rabbi said, that has the status of a Das Rabbim, a majority opinion. That has a lot of weight. But Stam Mishnah is stronger. Now sometimes Chachamim Omrim is really the opinion of one rabbi. But Rebbe and his courts chose to give that rabbi the strength of their weight. The whole court agreed with that opinion. So now it's Chachamim Omrim. So that's why the Mishnah will sometimes say, Chachamim Keman, who are the Chachamim? Chachamim are Rabbi Shimon. Wait a second, is it Rabbi Shimon or Chachamim? It's Rabbi Shimon's opinion that was given the status of Rabbim by Rebbe and his court. Over here we say Mani, and Rashi explains sometimes the Gemara asks Mani because the Mishnah doesn't seem to be in line with Rabbi Meir's opinion. So the Gemara says, this is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Titanya, because we have the following price. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Tzibur lo krivu ela psachim vechovot shekavu alayim zman. The congregation, even the congregation, didn't just bring every sacrifice they wanted on the public altar, but rather public sacrifices that are obligatory and have a set time. Aval chovot she'en kavu alayim zman, hacha ve'hacha lo karev. But if you have public obligations that do not have a set time, those are not brought on the public or the private altar. The public altar cannot be used for public sacrifices that don't have a set time. What's an example of that? So you guys remember the example. Ephraim, his shaver, the court rules he's allowed to use the shaver. 2 weeks later, everyone's using that shaver. A month later, the court says, we made a mistake. It's a biblical prohibition. We're all chayv kares. Most of Israel listened to that ruling. Now most of Israel has to throw out their shavers or take out the lift and cut or whatever it is. So now, what do we do? Over 50% of Israel sinned based upon the ruling of the public court. So the Torah says there's a par helam davar shel tzibur. The court brings one sacrifice on behalf of everyone. Now that's a public sacrifice, but it doesn't have a set time. You know, whenever they do it, then they have to bring it. Same thing, if they ruled that everyone's allowed to use those wigs. Then they come to the conclusion, no, when you use those wigs, you're actually participating in the Hindu idol worship. No, you can't use those wigs. Now everyone's been using those wigs, right? So I don't know if we count, how we count women, how you count 50% of Israel, whatever. But let's assume that all the bald men and we all need wigs. So we all use those wigs. So then you have a sar of avodah zarah. You have another public sacrifice on behalf of the congregation. This is a little different. This is specifically for avodah zarah issues. Again, public sacrifice doesn't have a set time. So we say our Mishnah is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Because our Mishnah said the only difference between a bama gdola and a bama ktana is that in a bama gdola, on a public bama, you may bring a psachim. We said it doesn't mean only psachim, it means everything that's like psachim. Psachim is a prototype. What's like psachim? Any public sacrifice that has a set time. Then our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one that says that only public sacrifices that have a set time may be brought on a Bama Gedola, which is a phenomenal Shita. Think about it. It means that for centuries, the Jews couldn't bring many of the Korbanos described in the Torah. Throughout the years in the desert, they could. They entered the land of Israel. Now it's going to be centuries before we have a temple, before we could bring all these other public sacrifices. Rabbanan disagree. Rabbanan say, whatever you could bring in the oil moed, you could also bring in the oil moed of Gilgal, that's a bama gdola. You could bring these other sacrifices. So Rabbanan disagree, but here we have a Stam Mishnah against Rabbanan. Knockout punch. Stam Mishnah comes stronger. La Halacha, we would probably go with this Stam Mishnah. We explained earlier, Stam Mishnah is stronger than Rabbim. We're all together?
So where would you be able to offer the fixed time offering?
If it has a fixed time public offering, that's on a bama gdola. If it does not have a fixed time and it's a public offering, can't bring it according to Rabbi Shimon.
At all.
at all. Until you have a temple, not on a bama. So our Mishnah says, the only difference is that on a bama gadola you could even bring psachim. We say it doesn't mean psachim, it means everything like psachim. Public offerings that have a set time can be brought on a bama gadola. What about other public sacrifices? Can't bring them.
Why psachim specifically?
It's a good question. It doesn't say, but we could say that many of the laws are learned from psachim, but I don't know. I don't know. We have to look at the Mefarshei Mishnah. Maybe they explain.
Is there anything that could be a Stam Mishnah? I mean, is there any opinion that could be a Stam Mishnah? Or is it like whenever
another Stam Mishnah?
Another Stam Mishnah.
Or Stam Mishnah and Machlokes in a later Mishnah. Stam Acharkach Machlokes, then you don't go with the Stam. Then we say Rebbe purposely put a Machlokes afterwards. Or sometimes the Talmud goes with another opinion, and that beats a Stam Mishnah. Okay, next Mishnah. Ein Bein. Okay, we're winding down the Ein Beins. Ein Bein Shilo Lirushalayim. There's no difference between Shilo and Jerusalem other than, and we'll explain what in a second. So what is Shilo? We were in the Midbar, and then when we came into the land of Israel, they set up public altar in Gilgal, the first camping grounds where Yeshua was. And then after Gilgal, they set up a public altar in Shiloh, which lasted a few centuries. And then in the book of Shmuel, when we lost the war and the Aron was taken, ultimately the Philistines came in, the Plishtim came and destroyed Shiloh on the day Eli died. So Shiloh was destroyed, and then they set up a public altar in Nob. And then when Shaul got upset at the people of Nov and he murdered all the Kohanim in Nov, so then Nov was destroyed, they set up a public altar in Givon. And then from Givon, the next place is Yerushalayim. So how do you remember all of that? So there's an acronym, Mag Shan Gai. Mag Shan Gai. Midbar, Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Yerushalayim. Mag Shan Gai, that the Tiferes Yisrael writes on the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, we have Shiloh. Shiloh was a major Bama Gdola. And in Shiloh, you had a unique thing that you had the public altar together with the Aron. When Shiloh was destroyed, the Aron was taken into Philistine territory. After that, they establish a Bama Gdola in Nov, but now the Aron is in Philistine territory. When the Aron comes back from Philistine territory, it goes to Beit Shemesh, from where it goes to Kiryat Yarim. It stays in Kiryat Yarim till it will go up to Yerushalayim, technically. So, from the destruction of Shiloh onward, you have a situation where you have the Bama Gdola being without an Aron. The Aron is in Kiryat Yarim, and the public Bama is in Nov, is in Givon, but it's not in... it's not where the Aron was, which was in Kiryat Yarim.
Why not?
Excellent question. I don't know why not. I don't know why they didn't transfer the Aron to be with it. I don't know. Ein bein Shiloh l'Yerushalayim ela shebeshilo ochelim kodshim kalim u'maser sheni b'chol haro'eh u'v'Yerushalayim lifnim min ha'choma. The Torah tells us that kodshim kalim, we have levels of holiness. We have sacrifices that are kodeshei kodashim, a very high level of holiness. Those have to be eaten in the temple courtyards. And then you have kodshim kalim, lower level holiness. That, it says, must be eaten before Hashem. What does it mean, before Hashem? So, in Yerushalayim, it means anywhere within Yerushalayim is called lifnei Hashem. In Shiloh, so the Mishnah says, Bechol Aroe, anywhere you could see Shiloh from, that was called Lifnei Hashem. Maiser Sheni also says, Lifnei Hashem Kecha Tochlenu. So you got to eat it before Hashem. Where do you eat Maiser Sheni? Also in Yerushalayim, within the walls of Yerushalayim. In Shiloh, anywhere you could see Shiloh from. So that's the difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. Where can you eat? How far does that holiness extend? Vekan vekan kodshei kodashim nechalim lifnim min haklayim. But in both places, the Kodshei Kodashim have to be eaten within the what are Kleim?
The walls?
Curtains. Oh, curtains. Oh. So, can we go on a tangent?
Of course.
Does anyone here say a Zeo Mekoman every morning? Or once a week? Does anyone here say the Mishnah a Zeo Mekoman in
never,
the morning?
Never heard
it. Are you serious?
At one point in my time, I memorized it at one point in time.
So
where do you say it? Where are you supposed to say it?
There is a chapter, I don't remember if it's the fourth or fifth chapter of Zvachim, which is printed in Sidurim, and the rabbis wanted a person to be insured that even if he doesn't learn through his day, he'll get a little bit of Torah, so we say the blessings of the Kohanim right after Birch Torah, a little bit of Gemara, so we say the Brises right after that, we say the Brise of Rabbi Shmuel, a little bit of Mishnah, so they said we should say this chapter which enumerates all the sacrifices that are brought, and that's part of what's called korbanos that we should try to say in the morning. So this Rachim should just know it's somewhere you should get there. If not this year, next year, if not next year, the following year. No pressure, you don't have to do it, but you should aspire to get there one day to say it. I'm also still aspiring to get there. I don't say it every day either. I wish I had the time, I should. You know, it's a proper thing to do. I say the korbanos of the psukim, but the mishnayos, so that a person should say. Now, why do we say these mishnayos? So the simple understanding is, well, Chazal wanted us to recount the korbanos that we cannot bring a sacrifice. Last week, Yehuda learned the book of Hosea, and he learned over there that it says, Unshalma parm sfaseinu. And the prophet Hosea, towards the end of his book, says, we will offer the cows with our lips in exchange for the sacrifices. We can't bring the sacrifices now, so we'll say it. And saying it, God says, I'll consider it as though you brought it. So we recount all the sacrifices every morning, so we're covered. But there's a deeper understanding. This chapter has no machlokas. It's one chapter in Shas. The whole chapter has no arguments. So that in and of itself is beautiful. But really, there's a deeper concept here. This is a chapter of Mishnayos that we have verbatim from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why there's no machlokas. Because we got this chapter all the way back to Moshe. So what does that have to do with our Mishnah? Because when you will read the Mishnayos in Ezeu Mekoman, you will see Kodshei Kodashim being described as eaten lifnim min hakeloim, within the curtains. And you ask yourself, what curtains? In the temple you had walls, you didn't have curtains. Answer, who composed this chapter? Moshe Rabbeinu. In Moshe Rabbeinu's temple, they didn't have walls, they had curtains. So that's why we say lifnim min hakeloim, within the curtains. You'll see it. Take a peek tomorrow morning. Open your siddur. You'll see before Baruch Shamar, there's a Zeo Mekoman, and you'll see Kodshei Kodashim Lefnei Min HaKlal.
So they keep it the same way.
That's one of the ideas of this. So we try to keep every Mishnah the same way. Okay, so our Mishnah says that Kodshei Kodashim in Yerushalayim and in Shiloh would be eaten within the curtains. Kedushas Shiloh Yeshacharei HaHeter. After the sanctity of Shiloh, we were still permitted to use public altars and private altars because Shiloh was a temporary place. So after it's destroyed, you're allowed to bring your own private altar in your backyard. V'kedushas Yerushalayim in acharei heter. But after Yerushalayim, that's it. No more private altars, no more public altars. One place, Yerushalayim. Gamarnu. Okay? Or as they say, set to. Okay.
In Gilgal, they also had the altar and the
Mishnah
together.
Correct. Amar Rav Yitzchak. Oh, what a famous quote. Rav Yitzchak's about to teach us. Shamati. I hoid. Shemakrivin bevet chonyo bizman hazeh. What's beis chonyo? So, Shimon HaTzadik had two sons. The younger son was named Chonyo. You know Shimon HaTzadik, he was Kohen Gadol after Ezra Sofer, and he was from the remnants of the Anshei Knesset Agdola. So he had two sons. His younger son was named Chonyo. When he was about to pass away, he said, my younger son Chonyo, he's the Talmud Chacham, make him Kohen Gadol. Chonyo said to his big brother, he said, you know, I'm not comfortable. I should be Kohen Gadol. You're the big brother. You be Kohen Gadol. So the big brother says, okay, if you say so, fine. I don't know how to do things. Chonya says, don't worry, I'll teach you. Then Chonya had second thoughts. I think there's a Gemara that says his wife told him, what'd you give it up for? I don't remember. I think it says something like that. So Chonya tells his big brother, he says, look, the first day when you're inaugurated, you got to take your wife's nightgown and show up to the temple in your wife's nightgown. So Chonya then turns to the other Kohanim and he says, I heard that Chonya had it out, that my big brother had it out with his wife. And she said, if you really love me, you'll show everyone, you'll show up the first day in my nightgown. So when his big brother shows up in his wife's nightgown, the other Kohanim are ready to kill him. So he says, what do you want from me? So they tell him, what kind of chutzpah for your wife? You're going to show up in her nightgown in the temple? We're going to kill you. So he says, but he told me to do it. So they asked him, what do you mean? So they heard the whole story. So they were ready to kill Chonya. They figured out what happened. Chonya wanted him to look like a fool. And then he'd be demoted and everyone would establish Chonya. So they turned around. They're ready to kill Chonya. So Chonya ran out to Egypt. Ran away. Went to Mitzrayim. He's in Mitzrayim. What's he going to do? So he builds a temple. And he sets up an altar. And that temple lasted for quite a while. Now, the... What?
That's to raise the flags for the name, right?
That's in Alexandria.
Was that it?
I don't know that it's connected. I don't know.
That was awesome.
That was also in Mitzrayim. So Chonya built a temple, and that temple is called in Shas Beis Chonya, the house of Chonya. It's not a house of God. And there's a machlokas, the Gemara in Kodshim, the Gemara discusses, was Chonya's intent for God? Or was he intended, did he do idol worship there? So, there's a machlokas. What was his intent in building it? And what were the Kohanim who were serving there, what were they thinking? So Rav Yitzchak says like this, Shamati, I heard, Shemakrivim beveis honyo bezman hazeh, that even now, think about it, this is Shimon HaTzadik's son, the beginning of the second temple, and Rav Yitzchak is quoting, I hear that even now, they're bringing sacrifices in Beis Chonya. Kosavar, seems like Rav Yitzchak holds, Beis Chonya lav Beis Avodah Zarah. That Beis Chonya was not a temple of doom, was not a temple of idol worship. Vekasavar, and he obviously holds, Kedusha Rishona Kidusha L'Sha'ata Velo Kidusha L'Atid Lavo. So here we have to discuss a very sad and powerful point in Jewish history. We're going to roll back the wheel of Jewish history to the time of Shlomo HaMelech, the golden era of Jewish history. All our enemies are subdued, and everyone accepts Shlomo as king. And Shlomo takes the wealth that his father has amassed, puts it away, he takes his own wealth, and builds the greatest temple of all time. Builds the Beis HaMikdash. And he prays to Hashem, and he gives sanctity, special sanctity to the temple. And Shlomo HaMelech wrote a work called Shir HaShirim. And in that work, he describes how the temple will be destroyed, and the Jews will be exiled, and the temple will be destroyed a second time, they'll be exiled again, and the deal that God makes with the Jewish people, three vows. So at the very apex of our history, we're holding at the golden era. Shlomo's building the temple, and the question is, what was Shlomo thinking? He knew it would not last for eternity. Imagine that. As he's building the temple, he knows this is finite. Even the temple of God is going to be destroyed. And the question is, what was Shlomo thinking at that time? Did he give sanctity to Yerushalayim, to the temple, that is everlasting? Or did he give sanctity and say, well, when it gets destroyed, then there's no difference between Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim. No difference between the Temple Mount and give us show.
Maybe he made a stipulation?
That's the question. That's called Kidsho L'Shaito. When he gave it sanctity for that time, was it Kidsho L'Osid Lavo? Did he also give it sanctity for eternity for the future or not? And this is a machlokas in Shas about the land of Israel, about Yerushalayim, about the Temple Mount. Nafkaminan, the land of Israel, must we give Trumas and Maisros to Oraisa? Nafkamina in Yerushalayim, certain laws pertaining to Yerushalayim. Nafkamina on the Temple Mount, oh, can we walk in there or not? Machlokas Rambam Ravid. Rambam says you're not allowed to walk in there, it's holy. Ravid says the Shekhinah appeared in my Beis Medrash and told us he's wrong.
Can we take that statement for...
He says in two places, he says, I disagree with the Rambam based on Sod Hashem Lireya. God gives a secret to those He loves. And the Tiferes Yisrael, I think, writes, it means Elio walked into the Beis Medrash and told them he's wrong. Now, you have to understand, the Ravid was an old Rosh Yeshiva. The Rambam was a young, up-and-coming rabbi.
This
was their relationship. Wow. So the Rambam writes his work, and they bring it to the Ravid. The Ravid says, let's see what this young rabbi has to say. And he writes his comments in accord with that attitude. Oh, this young rabbi says this, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Really?
The Ravid writes like that all the time on the Rambam. You have to understand, the Ravid was an old Rosh Yeshiva. The Rambam was new on the scene. The Ravid's going over his work. It must have took him like maybe a month or two to go through the Rambam. And he writes his little footnotes. Well, those little footnotes have a lot of weight halachically, because the Ravid was like Rav Eliashiv. He was like the Godel Hador. So what he had to say counted. But that's why you see the Ravid using terminology that's not so respectful of the Rambam, because in his mind, this is a young up-and-coming rabbi. Okay, well, he's wrong on this and wrong on that. Okay. Back to our Gemara. So,
it's interesting that the Muslims are there and they don't let us on that. Or if they do let us, right? But not freely.
We try to keep our classes apolitical. Back to the Gemara.
No, I don't mean political. I mean, maybe Hashem arranged it that we right now that we can't go on it because of that reason. Because
Rat Hashem, in 3 nights it's going to be Thursday night, and I'll be happy to discuss it. No, the comment deserves more elaborate answer than I could give you in this setting. Amar Rav Yitzchak, back to the beginning of the Gemara. Rav Yitzchak said, Shamati, I heard, Shemakrivin beveis chonyo bezman hazeh. That they're bringing sacrifices these days in beis chonyo. Kosovar, so the Gemara says, he must assume, beis chonyo lav beis avodah zarah, that the house of chonyo is not a house of idol worship. Vikosovar, and he must also assume, kedusha rishona, the first sanctification of Jerusalem, kedusha lishata, Shlomo HaMelech gave it sanctity for that time, velo kidesha le'atid lavo, but he did not give it eternal sanctity. Shlomo HaMelech said, I know it will be destroyed, and then Jerusalem loses its sanctity. That was Shlomo HaMelech's thoughts when he set up the Beit HaMikdash. What a genius. Wow. Dichtiv, for the verse says... Before we go into the verse... You guys with me so far? So, our Mishnah said, even after Jerusalem is destroyed, we may not bring sacrifices on bamos, on private altars. The Gemara explains, Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jewish people, you have not yet come to their inheritance, to the resting place that God has in store for you. Certain halachot, because you have not yet come. Chazal teach us that when Moshe Rabbeinu says you have not yet come to El HaMenucha, to the resting place is temporary, place that you rest. That's a reference to Shiloh. You have not yet come to the inheritance. Inheritance is something permanent. It remains in the family. That's a reference to Yerushalayim. So the Talmud says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu refer to Shiloh and Yerushalayim separately? Why does he say these laws are relevant? Because you have not yet come to Shiloh and Yerushalayim, to indicate to us that there's going to be a pause between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, and during that pause you will again be in a situation that you have not yet come. You have not yet come, and you will come to a resting place. And then,
not yet come applies again.
And then, when it's destroyed, you have not yet come applies again until you come to that permanent place of nachala and inheritance. So all together, yeah. Okay, onward. So now, that's the pasuk we're going to look at now. Do we have a chumash? No. Okay. So. The Gemara continues and says, "Dichtiv," because the verse says, "Kilo vatem adata lamnucha velanachala," for you have not yet come to the resting place and the inheritance. Midnucha, the resting place, zushilo. We explain that. Nachala zu Yerushalayim. So now, the pasuk put them both together. Rav Yitzchak understands Makish Nachala Limnucha, the pasuk in juxtaposing Yerushalayim with Shiloh is indicating that they have halachos in common. Ma Minucha yesh acharei ha-heter, just like after the resting place after Shiloh, we were permitted to bring private sacrifices on a private altar. Af nachala yesh achareha heter, so too the inheritance, so too after Jerusalem's destruction, one would be permitted to bring on a private altar. So what's a hekesh? That is a hekesh. We have on tradition that when Moshe Rabbeinu put two concepts in one pasuk, then God wanted those concepts to have something in common. Often, you have to have a tradition how to derive this, but that's called a hekesh. Two psukim next to one another is called smuchim. Two concepts in one pasuk is called a hekesh. One pasuk that says this is similar to that, that's also a hekesh, because the pasuk is telling you it's similar. But when it's written in the same pasuk, it makes sense. You know, if I say, I came on the bus and boy, it was hot today, so you understand that there's a connection. It was hot and I suffered on that bus because it was hot today. You know, there's a connection. I don't just put two ideas together in the same sentence. If the Torah put two things in one pasuk, the Torah is telling me the two things have something connected. Yeah? Okay. Amrulei, the student said to him, to who? To who? Rav Yitzchak, excellent. Amarta, did you really say that? Amar lehu lo. He says, no, I didn't say that. Amar Rava, Elohim Amra. I swear he said it. And I learned it from him. So why did he retract the statement? Mishum kasha de Rav Mari. Because of Rav Mari's question. The motive Rav Mari, because Rav Mari questioned the following question. It says in our Mishnah, Kedushat Shiloh yesh acharei heter, Kedushat Yerushalayim en acharei heter. It says, after the holiness of Yerushalayim, there will not be any permissiveness. You will not be permitted to bring on a private altar. So, that's it. If our Mishnah says it, he retracted.
Our Mishnah is from Rav Mari?
No, Rav Mari asked this question. Rav Mari is in Amora. Okay, we still have to do Tosus up here. Excellent! That's Tosus' question. Give the man a candy. I don't have any.
It's okay.
Good for you. So, we'll learn that Tosus, Bezrat Hashem. The motive of Marik, Kedushat Yerushalayim yesh acharei, Kedushat Yerushalayim en acharei heter. Ve'od. Tanan. And furthermore, we have a Mishnah in Zvachim. The Mishnah says, Mishabau Yerushalayim ne'esu abamot. Once they entered Jerusalem, once they came to Jerusalem, they were prohibited from bringing private altars. Ve'lo haya lehem od heter, and they would never again be permitted. Ve'hi hayta lenachala. And that would be the permanent inheritance of the Jewish people, the nachala that Moshe Rabbeinu describes. So what are we to do? Tanai, says the Gemara, really it is a machlokes tanoi. Titnan, for we have the following Bryce or Mishnah. Omar Rebbe Eliezer. Who's Rebbe? Yes, sir. Tanai means it is a machlokes tanoi. Tanai, it is diverging opinions among tanoi. The Braisa quotes Rabbi Eliezer. Who is Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah? Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Whose disciple was he? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a disciple of Hillel. Hillel's top student was Yonas ben Uziel. His smallest student was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five major students: Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, Rabbi Eliezer ben Arach, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yossi HaKoin, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel. Those are the five students, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, right? Mishnah in the second chapter of Pirkei Avos. Five students. He went, asked them, go, tell me what's a good path a person should go on. So, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya and Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus were counterparts. Anytime you have Stam Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, the blacksmith, the brilliant person who was a great astronomer, who outwitted all the Christians, knew how to refute all their quotes, and was ugly looking. He's the one that the Caesar's daughter asked him, how come a guy who's so brilliant in an ugly vessel? You guys know all these stories. You just got to put them together into Rabbi Yoshua. That's Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, the student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, is the Rabbi Eliezer throughout the Mishnah, the first Rabbi Eliezer to show up in Shas. He's the one that, till the age of 28, didn't know how to say Shema in benching, and then he wanted to learn Torah, and his father said, go, get married, teach your kids Torah. And he wept and wept until finally Elio showed up to him and said, you want to learn Torah, go to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Went up to learn by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya hosted him. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya is the Rabbi Yeshua who had the argument with Rabbi Gamliel. He was the blacksmith. He's the one who Rabbi Gamliel made him stand. The story in Brachas, Rabbi Gamliel was demoted from the Nasius because of the way he treated the elder Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus went to Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya and was learning under Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai until he became the great Rabbi Eliezer. And then they had the machlokas of Tanur Shelachnai. The argument about that oven, should they purify it or impure it? And he argued and he said, if I'm right, the tree will prove it, and the tree hopped away, the stream will prove it, and the stream started streaming the other way, the walls will prove it. The walls started caving in on the academy. Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet, said, don't you dare. The walls froze. They didn't go back up because Rabbi Eliezer. They didn't go down because Rabbi Yeshua. Or Rabbi Gamliel stood on his feet. And then they ostracized him. And poor Rabbi Eliezer spent the rest of his life in ostracism. And then his wife was a sister of Rabbi Gamliel. She always prevented him from doing tachanun, so he shouldn't kill him, right? One day she missed. He did tachanun. Rabbi Gamliel dropped dead. He was a great sage, Rabbi Eliezer. But because he was shamuti, because they ostracized him, no halachas like him. Whenever you read Rabbi Eliezer, it's like reading Beis Shammai. Halacha is not going to be like him. Shamuti is like Beis Shammai. So, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, we're going to read the great Talmud Chacham Rabbi Eliezer. He and Rabbi Yeshua were the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Amar Rabbi Eliezer. We'll review these stories. Eventually it'll be in your blood. Why is this important? Because if you live who these people are, then you'll start living what they say as well. You have to develop a picture who these people are. And then it's easier to remember who said what. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Shamati, I heard, Kshayu Bonin Baichal. Oh, famous Gemara. Shows up in four tractates. I heard that when they were building the Heichal, they were building the Holy of Holies, so they did the following. Osin Kilaim. They made, what are klaim? Curtains. Good. Laichal, the klaim, and curtains, lazara, for the courtyard. Now, heichal is the holy, right? And within that is the holy of holies. Azara is the holy outside. So, they had curtains for the holy, where you had the heichal, where you had the menorah, and where you had the lechem aponim, and where you had the mizbeach hazav, and within that you had the Holy of Holies, and then they had curtains for the Azara on the outside. You guys know what the map of the Beis HaMikdash looked like? You know where you find the map of the Beis HaMikdash? In the back of the Mishnayot. I'll show you. 1 second. It's always helpful to see. I photocopied it and I pasted it on top of my where I sat. So whenever I'd hit Mishnayos and Gemaras that applied to it, I'd always look up to the map and get a picture. What is it?
Give me 1 second.
Let's get Mishnah.
Funny thing is, it's about college, so.
But it's a joke.
What a joke.
It's so different than college. It's so rewarding. Yeshiva is so fulfilling.
Exactly.
It's so you work hard, but like you wake up the next day and you're so happy to do it again.
What do you mean? You're going to bed at night.
Yeah, it's like
when you're going to bed at night, you're full. You're like
you feel good.
Like I was productive today.
Yeah, exactly.
I helped. I had a positive light.
Exactly. Like, you wake up the next morning, Baruch Hashem, and you're like, oh, I'll continue to do this every morning. You're like
it's
wow.
You deposited.
We get to do it again.
Deposited in the bank. That's it. Yeah, long gone. No one can take that away.
Get to do it again.
So you can stay here like 5 years and not even realize how long you've been here.
Already
it's been nothing. This has been what? I've been here what? Almost 5 months.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's what it feels in some ways like.
It's like a week.
Yeah. Yeah, but some ways it feels like you've been here your entire life.
Yeah. So crazy, right? Yeah.
Time is a funny thing. There's some moments you feel like yesterday was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Some moments you feel like 3 years ago was yesterday.
Yeah.
It's all about the moment you're in.
Oh, I wish we had pizza was sweet.
Yeah.
Lama Bar would be a lot easier. Oh my gosh. Barn looks a lot bigger out there. And from the back row of the show.
Impressive.
I gotta move up. I can't sit there anymore. I can't. Is that the Rosh Hashanah there?
Yeah. No, you can't even see that. You got to be in the open.
Remember, I'm scared because all people in the front died. Like, a lot of people died here in the morning. It was actually empty today.
There's not that many people in the morning.
Yeah,
it's more than the actual universe.
I don't like when they switch that guy, the guy who does it, like he's been doing it. Like, he's awesome. He's loud and clear, and, like perfect timing. I don't know why they switch him on Mincha.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. At first I thought it was just an honor of a Buddhist or something.
No, it was like, then Rabbi Lichtman did it, and then Rabbi Lichtman was also there. But there was some other person.
Yeah,
I'm not
quite sure.
If this baby bread, you gotta be loud. When you're seeing this, it's like you have a wall, like look at the Ezra Nashim, see how it curves, like this wall?
Yeah.
Okay, so in front of that, it's like a part of the shul. Behind there, down here, it's like you can't hear or see anything. Only the Kolo guys were there all day.
Why is that?
I don't know.
They burned out?
This schedule is a lot better because they change it every day. Like they're smart. The schedule is different every day. Your morning's the same, the rest of the day is different. It's enough routine and a lot of change up. But it's like the change up is also cool. It's also a routine because it's like it's a longer routine. They're smart here. Like I move away, they it's amazing.
Okay. There's a tractate called Midos, which focuses on the measurements of the temple. And in the back of that tractate, you have a picture, a few pictures, and you see there are letters in each room. Now, we'll discuss it in a second. And the letters correspond to an explanation, what each letter is. What you have to notice is where north is. This is north. The maps very often in Talmud have east on top, just like all ancient maps. So here, north would be here, this way. Okay, so here we have the Heicha.
The Kotel's here?
Here. Here we have the Heicha, and then the Holy of Holies. Okay? Yofi. We got a picture, and the rest out here is the Azara. Now, how did they build all this? So, it says these are rooms all around. They had lishkos, rooms that went all around. And they had rooms that went all around here. And the rooms had three floors. One of the rooms was had a mikveh. One of the rooms people slept in at night, the kohanim. One of the rooms they'd make the bread. One of the rooms they'd make the incense. Different things they prepared in each room. Okay.
Like a dormitory?
Yeah. They had a place to sleep here, the kohanim that served.
Learning place?
Sure. Over here. You had over here the Lishka Sagazis, where the high court sat, up here. Best base medrash in the world. Wow. The high court, right, up here. Right. Okay. Back to our Gemara. So, we said that this idea of whether the Kedusha of Yerushalayim was eternal or not is a machlokas tanoim. For the Braisa, or the Mishnah, says the following. Rabbi Eliezer, we had this whole long introduction as to who Rabbi Eliezer was. Rabbi Eliezer said, I heard that when they were building the Heichal, they had curtains, and when they were building the Azara, they also had curtains. But, Ela, but, Sheba Heichal bonin mi bachutz. The Heichal, they put the curtains inside, and they stood outside the curtains and they built. So they weren't looking into the Holy and Holy of Holies. So they set up curtains inside and stood outside the curtains and built outside the curtains. Uva'azara bonin mibifnim. And in the Azara, they'd actually stand inside the curtains and build. So now that certainly seems to indicate something. What's going on here? So in a second, the Gemara is going to explain. Vama Rabbi Yeshua. Who's Rabbi Yeshua? Rabbi Yeshua? Rabbi Yeshua on the Mishnah is Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, the blacksmith, the brilliant person who had bad looks, and that made him even more brilliant. We know it, we just went through a whole source. Okay, so Rabbi Yeshua says, and we said they're very often together, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Just like Rabbi Eliezer went with Shammai, he was Shamuti, so too Rabbi Yeshua went with Hillel. There are stories about two Gerim. They came to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, just like famous stories between Hillel and Shammai, there are similar stories between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Medrash Rabba brings. So, Rabbi Yeshua says, Shamati, I heard Shemakriv and Afal Pishen Bayis, that they would bring sacrifices even though there was no temple. Ochlin Kodshe Kadoshim Afal Pishen Kloim. They'd eat the holiest sacrifices even though there were no curtains. Kodshim Kalim Umayser Sheni Afal Pishen Choma. They'd eat the lower holiness even without a wall. Mipenei, because shekdusha rishona kidsha l'sha'ata v'kidsha l'atid lavo. The first sanctity that Shlomo gave was forever. Even when they came and destroyed the temple, the sanctity of Yerushalayim never left. Shlomo gave it eternal holiness. Michlal, we understand that they must be arguing The Rabbi Eliezer Savar Lokit Shalasid Lava. Rabbi Eliezer holds that they did not sanctify it for eternity. If Rabbi Yeshua explains, I heard that they were eating without any curtains, so we understand that according to Rabbi Eliezer, why'd they need the curtains? To give new sanctity, to give it the form of a room, so that they would be able to eat sacrifices again even before they finished building. So isn't that the argument here? And then we would have a machlokes tanoim as to whether Yerushalayim had eternal sanctity. Notice that the Gemara is coupling Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash into one discussion here. It's all one big discussion, it seems. Either they both have or they both don't have at this point.
Why would Rabbi Eliezer's statement go against that? That Yerushalayim has eternal holiness? Is Eliezer just saying that there's different levels of holiness?
So we understand that if Rabbi Yeshua says they didn't need curtains and they were eating holy food, he says because it had eternal holiness, we understand that as an indication that when Rabbi Eliezer said they had curtains, he's saying they wanted to eat sacrifices even before they finished building. It took years to build. So they set up these curtains, and once they had curtains, they could reinstate the holiness, and then they built with the curtains, because the curtains gave it the form like a building. So that's our understanding. In light of what Rabbi Yeshua said, that's how we're interpreting what Rabbi Eliezer said. Michlal, that's what the Gemara says. We understand by inference that Rabbi Eliezer must hold Lo Kitchel Asid Lovo, that he did not sanctify it for the future. Now who's talking here? Who's talking? It's the Talmud talking, right? Who's the Talmud? Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina fires back at Ravashi. Wait a second, what Ravashi say here? So tells us Tosfos and Chulin. Tosfos says when you encounter a thing like that, you see an indication that Ravashi is the one that composed the Talmud. Ravashi composed this whole work till here. He didn't say anything. We didn't see Ravashi's name mentioned. Suddenly Ravina fires back and says, wait a second. Mimai, who says?
It's like default, as if like...
Right. So you'll notice this isn't the only place. For some reason, Tosus mentions it in Chulin and maybe another place or two. Tosus doesn't mention it every time it shows up. But we could notice it. You know, when all these critics come and analyze Talmud, we could say, guys, just look around a little bit. You'll see. Yeah. Every time I talk to these critics, I marvel at how, you know, they come up with things that people said 500 years ago and were answered 500 years ago. It's like, okay. I don't initiate conversations with them either. They start with me. I don't start with them.
For
me too.
To push them away.
I stay away from them too. I pack off. The Medrash says that the Tanoim would run away from them. Medrash says, stay away. So I also do. But sometimes people creep into Beis Medrash and they don't tell you who they are. And then they come with all kinds of questions on Thursday nights. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina said to Ravashi, Mimai, Dilma dilekuli alma kitcher kedusha shon kitcher shaitev kitcher lasid lovo. Who says what's been bothering Moshe? It's not for nothing that his name is silver. Look at what. You're right. The Gemara Ravina says the same thing you were saying. Who says? Maybe everyone agrees the holiness was for eternity. Umar Maidishmi Aleika Omar, and one rabbi said what he heard. Umar Maidishmi Aleika Omar, another rabbi said what he heard. But where do you get to say that they're arguing? And they're arguing in this concept. Who said? So you'll tell me, wait a second, if it had eternal holiness, what they need the curtains for, right? For a simple modesty. You don't leave the Holy of Holies uncovered like that. Modesty. But it must be that it goes with these Tanoic opinions. You want a Machlokas Tanoim? Here you have a Machlokas Tanoim. Detanya, for the Braisa says, Amar Rabbi Yishmael v'Rabbi Yossi, Lama Manucha Chamim et Eilu. Why did the rabbis in the last chapter of Eruchin enumerate these cities as Bate Arei Choma? Okay, so the Torah tells us that there are going to be cities that are Bate Arei Choma. Yeah? There are going to be cities that are Ir Choma, a walled city. And if you have a bayit, a house within a walled city, so then the laws of sale change. Different laws of sale, different laws of Yovel, what happens after a year, after 2 years, after 49 years, different laws. Special laws for Batei Arechoma, we will get to it. Now, there are also laws of holiness. A Metzora, person who has Tzara'as, may not stay within a walled city. The walled cities of Israel were given extra holiness. So, the Mishnah in the end of Erechin enumerates what cities were walled from the days of Yeshua bin Nun. Now, the Braisa says, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says, why did the rabbis enumerate these cities? There were many other cities. Why does the Mishnah bother telling me these? Because when the Jews came back from exile, after the exile of the first temple, they come back to re-establish the land of Israel, to rebuild the temple. So we're building the second temple. They found these cities and reinstated their holiness, gave them holiness again. Notice what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying. The land of Israel lost its holiness, the walled cities lost their holiness, they had to reinstate their holiness. But we understand the first holiness, the first cities, they lost their holiness when we lost the land of Israel. Alma, we see Kasavar Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi holds Kedusha Rishona Kidusha Lishata Velo Kidusha Latid Lavo. The first holiness was not eternal. I'll ask you a contradiction. You want to tell me that's what he meant? I'll quote you the same Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, he said the following. Are these the only cities that were walled? It says that just in the string of Argov, just in that territory on the eastern side of the Jordan, that 60 walled cities. The Mishnah doesn't enumerate 60. In one territory, he had 60. V'chtiv. And then later on it says, all of these cities, they have a long enumeration, and then the Torah says, all of these cities that were conquered on the eastern side of the Jordan, this next enumeration, all of these were fortified, that a wall, that iron doors, that a bolt, and we just took them over when we went to war. Moshe just conquered city after city. So you have a long enumeration. You see, we had at least 100 cities that were walled. They're not mentioned in the Mishnah. So why were these cities enumerated in the Mishnah? These are the walled cities of Israel. No, there are many, many more walled cities of the land of Israel.
Are they biblically Israel?
Yeah. Ela. Lama manu chachamim et elu. So then why did the rabbis enumerate these? Shekshalub na'agola matzu elu v'kidshum. Because when the Jews came back from exile, they found these and gave them holiness. So far, identical to the first. Right? That was the Mishnah before. Now, that was the Braisa before. This is our Braisa so far. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is consistent. He's saying the same thing. There were many, many more cities. The Mishnah enumerates these. These were the ones that were given holiness when they came back in the Second Temple. Then he continues and says, Kidshum Hashto. What? They gave him holiness now? Ha Amre Lo Tzricha Lekidushay. But in the end of that Mishnah, it says they did not have to give them holiness. Anything, the Mishnah concludes and says, and Yovana, no, anything you have a masoret from your fathers that this city is walled, any city that you have a tradition is walled from the days of Yeshua, has this holiness. So how could you say that he meant to say they gave them holiness now? The conclusion of the Mishnah says, and not only these, but any other city that you'll come up with that they had, that you have a tradition, had a wall from the days of Yeshua, has this holiness. Elo, but rather what Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi meant to say is, Matze'u et elu na'um. They found these cities they were able to locate. So they enumerated these cities. And that's a conclusion of the Mishnah. And not only these cities have the holiness, but any city that you come up with a tradition from your forefathers, that it has a wall from the days of Yeshua. Mitzvot alanu noagot ba. These mitzvot are applicable there. Mipnei shekedusha shona kitchar shatav kitchar atid lavo. For the first holiness was for all time. So now in the second brisa, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying, Kedusha Rishona, the first holiness of the land of Israel, when Yeshua entered and gave holiness to the land of Israel, it was for all time. So one brisa, Rabbi Shmuel, says it's for all time. The other brisa, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, says, no. It was a temporary holiness. They had to reinstate the holiness. Now, notice that all of our quotes till now were all opinions that seem to say that the holiness was for eternity. We said maybe Rabbi Eliezer holds it was not. Then we said who says? Now we're saying maybe Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says it's not, and we're bringing a contradiction to that. So the sources we have thus far seem to say the holiness was for eternity. Remember, the Gemara began with a quote from Rabbi Yitzchak. The quote seemed to say that you could bring sacrifices in Beis Chonio because when Jerusalem was destroyed, it did not retain its holiness. That's it. You lost the holiness. Now we can bring sacrifices elsewhere. Said the Gemara, they asked Rav Yitzchak, did you say it? Rav Yitzchak says, no, I didn't say it. They said, yeah, I did. But he retracted the statement. Why did he retract it? So he said, because our Mishnah says not like that. The other Mishnah says not like that. And now we're trying to find. So Gemara said, yeah, but really there are two opinions in the Mishnah. We tried quoting the two opinions, Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yeshua. We said, who says? Maybe even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that the holiness was eternal. Now we're saying, maybe it's Rabbi Shmuel. And we're saying, wait a second, you tell me that's what Rabbi Shmuel holds? I'll quote you another quote pertaining to the same topic where Rabbi Shmuel seems to say that the holiness is eternal. And then we would end up not having any opinion that says that the holiness left. Kashad Rabbi Shmuel ad Rabbi Shmuel. I seem to have a contradiction between the quotes and the name of Rabbi Shmuel. Trei Tanoia livid Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. First answer, these are two opinions as to what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said. Two different quotes. So then we would at least have an opinion that says that the holiness left. Ve'i ba'is, and if you want, what does ba'i mean? Excellent. Guys, you should have that in your note. Ba'i, need, want, ask, right? Ve'i ba'is, and if you want, Ema, I'll tell you. Ha Rabbi Elezer b'Rabbi Yossi omra. This is not really Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, but rather Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi said, Detanya, for we have the following brice on the name of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Omar, the Pasuk when describing Bate Orei Choma, the Pasuk says, Ir Asher Lo Choma, and the Lo is written Lamed Aleph, and it is read Lamed Vav. Lamed Vav means it has. Lamed Aleph means it does not have. Even though right now you look at it, you don't see any wall, but it had it in the past. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi holds it still retains its holiness. So the brisa that says that the holiness is eternal, that's Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi. The brisa that says it was temporary is Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. The conclusion of the Gemara is that there is at least one Tana that holds in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi that Kedusha Rishona lo kitchalasid lavo. But all other sources seem to indicate that the holiness of Israel was eternal, and the Gemara seems to equate that with the holiness of Yerushalayim and the holiness of the Temple Mount. So from our Gemara, all fingers are pointing in the direction that the holiness remains up there. Now, we'll conclude. We're out of time. I owe you the Tosus up there, but we'll conclude with a beautiful Dvar Torah that Rav Shlomo Fisher said. Rav Shlomo Fisher lives in Harnof, big, big, big Talmud Chacham. So he said, what's this derivation? The Pasuk says, a city, asher lo choma, that it has or does not have a city. The word lo is written with a vav, written with an aleph, read with a vav. So he said it's like this. When you look at the text, what do you see? You see lamed aleph, a city that does not have a wall. When you look at the text, the kri, what you see, is lamed aleph. When you look at the city, what do you see? Lo, no wall, right? The kri, not the ksiv, the kri, what do you hear? We say it should be read, asher lo choma, that it does have a wall, lamed vav. What do you hear? You're supposed to hear Lamed Vav. It does have a wall. What do you hear when you talk to your parents? They tell you, yeah, it had a wall. So he said, that's the Kri Ksiv, that's the Drasha. The Ksiv, what you see, it says in the text, Asher Lo, it does not have a wall. What do you see when you look at the city? No wall. That's what you see when you look at the text. What do you hear? You're supposed to hear it as though it says, Asher Lo, Lamed Vav. It does have a wall. Well, that's what you hear from your parents. That's what you hear from previous generations. So that's why he explained this Drasha.